Now, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. Now, it is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill, and the latter do so out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I am in chains. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. Yes, and I will continue to rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I do not know. I am torn between the two. I desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is better by far. But it is more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain, and I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith, so that through my being with you again, your boasting in Christ Jesus will abound on account of me. This is the word of the Lord. Well, I am more convinced than ever right now that we are approaching end times and the end of the world. My Minnesota Vikings are in the playoffs. I'm found it actually in Matthew this week. There'll be wars and rumors of wars, and the Vikings will be in the playoffs. Such a rare thing, glorious thing. If they win it all, mark it down. We will be with the Lord. That will be a glorious, glorious day. And I know I've just jinxed them forever because God will not be mocked in that. But it is such a rarity. This is a good day. Don't steal my joy today. It's going to be exciting unless it goes bad. So, the Apostle Paul in a prison in chains. When we look at the Christian life, and we look at the world of ministry, it's interesting that there's a lesson we never learn. And yet, in the deepest moments of the Christian faith, we come to realize this, is that Christ is not exalted, and the gospel is not advanced through human successes. The people don't see the depth of the gospel by witnessing vast human strength and ones pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps. The gospel is usually advanced in hard circumstances by individuals who are in places they would rather not be, but yet who are faithful simply because they are called to be there. What is seen in those moments is witnessing the depth of faith that can appear in the midst of severely trying circumstances. The power of the gospel is the very thing that shows itself to be true when life is going to you-know-what in a handbasket. And not when it's all ease. Not when it's when a church is firing on all cylinders and they've got a great public marketing relations team and everything is going swell and all the families are getting along and the children aren't crying ever. There's no sickness. There's no illness. There's no funerals. It's an illusion. The advancement of the gospel has never been a thing that can be engineered by human hands. The advance of the gospel is the faith that comes out of an individual's life wherever God has them. And it's powerful. When I think of chains, and I think of those who have been in chains for the gospel, literally, we look at those who have had tremendous impacts on the human race, have been those who have found Christ, who have witnessed to Christ in the midst of devastatingly difficult prison circumstances, either wrongfully or because they deserve to be there, but something changed dramatically. Just to name a few. A great Russian novelist, two great Russian novelists, incidentally, transformed in prison, from Fyodor Dostoevsky as well as Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Great Christian writer in Britain who did Pilgrim's Progress was John Bunyan. Profound prison experience. Modern day in America is a man named Charles Colson. Went to prison for the Watergate scandal and became an ambassador for an organization called Prison Fellowship Ministries. To give you some ideas, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who is a great Christian Russian, wrote this: "Bless you, prison, bless you. For it was while I was laying on the rotting prison straw when I discovered the meaning of earthly existence lies not, as we have grown used to thinking, in our prosperity, but in the development of our souls." Powerful. Chuck Colson writes this: "I realized that it was not my success God had used to enable me to help these in prison or hundreds of others just like it through his ministry. My life of success was not what made this morning so glorious. The real legacy of my life was my biggest failure, that I was an ex-convict. My greatest humiliation being sent to prison was the beginning of God's greatest use of my life. He chose the one thing in which I could not glory for his glory." A great quote. The one thing I couldn't feel proud about, couldn't glory in, wished it would never happen, was the very thing that God decided to use for what? The advancement of the gospel. Paul recognizes that he is in chains. He asked to be sent to Rome. That was his doing. For all intents and purposes, he may or may not have survived the trial in the Holy Land. There wasn't much to put against him at that time, but he decided, as a citizen of Rome, I appeal to Caesar. He was sent on a ship to go there, and now he's in there in chains. And what's remarkable about these verses is that he doesn't sit here and complain about his chains. It just is what it is. This is where he's at. This is the place where he's sitting. And he says, you know what? Here's what's happened to advance the gospel. It's spreading to the palace guard, to everyone else in the situation who knows me. There had been constant shifts every 4 hours, people to be in contact with him, to begin to, word would spread. What kind of a person do we have behind bars here? We have someone who is in chains for Christ. And he's saying that because of what is happening in Paul, with his chains, with his testimony to what his faith is, most of the brothers and sisters, he's talking about the Christians and the believers in the fledgling church in Rome, are now becoming more and more confident and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. Boy, isn't that how it goes? Right? You won't bungee jump unless you see your friend do it first, right? That's a random example, but hey. But more seriously, you're in Rome. Christians are, and will be, surely thereafter, with a man named Nero, put atop poles and lit on fire to be torches for parties. Would you stand up for Christ there? Paul, his boldness is causing other people to become confident in trying to talk about their faith and advancing the gospel. It's really an important thing that we see. And it's done through the struggle that's in front of us, knowing that God can and will work in powerful ways in circumstances we would rather not choose for ourselves. Could throw in a number of other names of those who have been in difficult circumstances. But Paul is really right. He wants us to know that even the places where we'd rather not be can be used by him to advance the gospel. And that in the midst of these difficult circumstances, we can be the means by which we are encouraging one another to be bold in our faith, to not fear what may come, and to look at our present experience as something is not simply to be escaped, but still yet to be lived, and to be lived well. It's really a powerful thing that he would look at his circumstances as something not that he is consumed with in terms of where he is. Rather, he's thinking about what can be done in the larger picture. How can I be used by God now? How can I participate in that? That first piece, that suffering has an impact. And I'm sure we can all think of examples of those whose faith has moved us simply because of their trust in God, even while they were going through difficult circumstances, life experiences, awful struggles related to health, deep conflict, leading something and yet being beaten up for it. There is something about the chains of life providing an opportunity for the advancement of the gospel. It's not superhuman at all. It's just rather Christ alive and in us. Well, Paul goes on to talk about, therefore, and it's an interesting little editorial side switch here about the preaching of Christ. He's looking at his chains being something that's advancing the gospel, and now he talks about varying motives in the gospel going out. I find this to be pretty interesting, actually. So you have those who are kind of trying to preach Christ in a way that's really trying to get at Paul. Not sincerely, he says, they're trying to stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains. But there's also those out there who are proclaiming the gospel out of love and knowing that I'm put here for the defense of the gospel. And Paul closes with, you know, the motives are varied here with how the gospel is going out in Rome. Some don't like me, some don't like how I do it, and some are trying to put themselves forward. Others get it, but what do I care? The gospel is being preached. It's a really interesting thing to say, but what I think Paul's getting at is that he is an advanced in years. He's a mature Christian at this point, and he knows that the gospel is and will always be quite separate from the personality of the person giving it. And if we're honest with ourselves, there's always going to be a variety of motives that go forward in how we, all as Christians, go out and evangelize and share our faith. We're never perfectly motivated, nor do we have the perfect kind of method for how that plays itself out. But Paul is concerned that Christ be preached. Does it matter? Does it not matter then how people live? That's not at all what's going on right here. Paul just wants to make sure that Christ is proclaimed. And I think he looks at a lot of the folks and saying, you know what? A lot of the motives here that are mixed are from young believers. They don't know yet. They think they have it all figured out. They're going to learn eventually the wisdom of faith that has to trust not in one's strength and not in one's delivery, but in the power of the truth that is being conveyed. So here a few things can be said, I think, about listening to a number of addresses on this lately about celebrity Christian culture and the dangers that it can pose. That is to say that there is this, we live in a culture that loves celebrity. We love the super athletes, we love the movie stars, we roll out the red carpet for them. And what's beginning to become more and more prominent in the midst of our society is the celebrity Christian culture. It's the teaching ministries and pastors that are front and center on the TVs. They've got a great internet ministry. Their sermons are being watched daily on YouTube, Vimeo. And the problem with it is that it becomes, I think, something far more than what Paul is talking about, simply a motive of misunderstanding. It actually becomes something much deeper that I think Paul would really have reacted against. And that is to say is that we want the personality rather than the actual message. And we've seen this really recently in the past 3 or 4 years where some massive churches who've been, we think, doing great things, their pastors have had celebrity falls. One in Portland, Oregon Seattle, Washington, of a church in which the pastor had a huge following and was quite abusive to his elder board. He was quite controlling of the organization. They had 95% staff turnover. Just awful, awful leadership of the church. Another one recently is a grandson of Billy Graham down in Florida of a Presbyterian church and who was unfaithful and had to leave this church. A number of unfaithful stories lately. And what's bizarre is that, of course, this causes to denigrate the gospel, but they are cycling back into ministry mere months later with reports being given by their elder boards or by the ministries that are hiring them back saying their struggles and their sufferings make them a better minister for the church. I think that suffering does advance the gospel. I think that our struggles can be used by God for the gospel. Stupidity does not advance the gospel. And if the kinds of relationship damage that has been done by leaders like this, there is no way that that has been healed or taken care of with their families or with their parishioners in the matter of months. What is it? It is ministries that want the celebrity to come and to keep the machine going. My own view is that God would be actually much more pleased with a shrinking church that's being faithful to the gospel than wanting personalities with terrible motives making it look good. I think it's wrong. Now, I listen to some sermons from people that I really respect. But there is a damage in wanting celebrity cultures to kind of guide our spiritual growth in this. Spiritual growth happens in the trenches, on the ground, person to person, faith to faith, listening to one another. Strength in suffering does does advance the gospel. And Paul, in other letters, is very clear about pulling out of the circuit false teachers, sheep's and wolves' clothing, those who are preaching themselves and not Christ. Let's not look at a statement like these things that have been put out and say, this, Paul would just say, hey, I don't care what's going on as long as Christ is being preached. No, Paul, I think, in this text is looking at young folks who think they know how to do it, who think they know how to get it done, who are a little cranky about Paul's way of preaching and methods. They want to do it differently. Paul said, yeah, whatever. What I think Paul is getting at is actually just something that C.S. Lewis put forward in Mere Christianity. His introduction, he talks about looking at the Christian faith as a home. You come into a hallway in which there's lots of different rooms. And in these rooms are, you know, Baptists, Presbyterians, and the like. There's lots of jokes that go along with the rooms. Those in the rooms that think they're the only ones there. But what Lewis is saying is that we want Christ to be preached. And motives will be mixed, and understandings of Scripture will be mixed. You will have a variety of traditions that unfold from the Russian Orthodox, who are being faithful to Christ, like Solzhenitsyn, to the ones in the bush in Africa, who have a traveling evangelist showing up to them, and their church services look way differently. He's saying, you know what? We should be supportive of those who understand what the gospel is, the truth of the gospel at its core. At the heart of it is this, what the thing's called mere Christianity. And he says, as you're standing in the hallway and you're looking at the doors, the last thing you should do is this: ask the question, do I like the service? In other words, does this church appeal to me, is what he's saying. No, that's not what you're interested in. You should ask the question, do what they believe, is it true? Are the doctrines true? Is holiness here? Does my conscience move me towards this? So you do that out of conviction. But he goes on to say, listen, when you've reached your own room,